This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
This is Danny and Dusty.
Meringue-a-tang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All fellows with monkey sounds in there and called good.
The old like, Danny Meringue pie?
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Good afternoon. Hey, welcome in. Happy Wednesday, a wrestling Wednesday.
Tell me what to be happy about.
Oh, yeah, brother. I love wrestling. You know, wrestling is, it is crossed over. It is way more acceptable for adults to watch now. When we were kids, it was just like only kids and then the crossover of Monster Truck Guy.
And weird adults.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think just adults are getting weird now.
It's real to me, damn it.
Right? Yeah. Like that's all it was. It's the dynamic has changed with wrestling. I was watching Netflix last night. Number one streaming show,
yep.
Raw, on a Tuesday night.
It happens over and over and over again, man. They did their international tour. Mm-hmm. Like they've been going through the Middle East, and Kazim Fumayide, who does a bunch of stuff for them.
R.I.P. Iron Sheik.
Oh God, yeah. The jabroni.
Do you think they would have brought him over?
Yeah, no, I don't think Sergeant Slaughter and Iron Sheik could
no
really do much
today.
I don't
think they would do that. Well, yeah. Yeah, no, no.
But so they've been barnstorming through the Middle East, and I saw him comment. He's like, if you don't think this has gone mainstream, watch these audiences on the other side of the planet singing every single entrance song. And
I saw that Nate Jones had that tweet. Nate Jones had that tweet. But he's right. He is 100% right. Is that everybody is going crazy, and it is. It is 100% a globally mainstream sport, which is so weird to think of where wrestling was and what it used to be. You know, like back in the days of Portland wrestling. Like Portland wrestling was like one of the great regional wrestling federations that were out there. And, you know, Vince McMahon, he's like, you know what? I'm just going to go pillage all of the talent everywhere and put it in one place. And holy crap, has that taken off? It's been interesting to see, to say the least.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Again, I don't have the capacity to get into it, but every now and then, if I'm flipping through over, it's on a channel that I was already watching or something like that, I'll leave it on for a few minutes just to kind of see what's up.
Yeah, I can't wait to really start diving into it with my son. He's gotten in and out of it, but I feel like this summer is where he'll find his love for wrestling. You know, when like nothing's on, because he wants to watch like basketball. He's really big into the TGL for some reason now.
I mean, that's who they're going for.
They got him. They got my daughter, too, who's 11. They both love watching the TGL, which I was like, hey, you want to watch, you know, the first four? And he's like, who's playing? I'm like, Alabama State and St. Francis. He's like, what? No. I want to watch the TGL. But I feel like he will love wrestling, too. And I loved wrestling growing up.
Yeah.
Loved it. And like this text says, or people in our age range that grew up watching it are getting back into it. Yeah. I probably will once my son like is really diving into wrestling. Hell yeah, I'm going to get into it.
The
what are they calling this era?
I don't know.
Because the Attitude Era, like that's
the strongest era of wrestling.
And that's going to be hard to beat. Yeah. And boy, was that problematic.
Oh yeah.
It like think about how many people's sense of humor. Dark.
We're defined by that.
Kind of offensive. We're created through the Attitude Era. Hand up.
Yeah. The darker it is, the more you're not supposed to laugh at it, the more I love it.
Yeah.
Denny Abbia is a big John Cena guy. He does the you can't see me face after the N1.
And one, baby.
I'm gonna do some intrepid reporting tonight. I'm gonna ask him what he thinks about John Cena's heel turn.
Oh, hey, yeah.
He's a big John Cena guy. I got to get Denny's thoughts on that.
Yeah, here's another one. Is this the final downturn or downfall of society? Hashtag idiocracy. Probably. I mean, I don't think it's the final one. I mean, the fact that Crocs are huge is probably the biggest sign.
Which is, people, if you don't know, Crocs as a company was saved because Idiocracy gave them a bag because they were looking for the dumbest possible shoes for their prisoners to wear throughout the movie.
Crocs were literally going out of business.
It's what saved them.
And they came in and just bought the inventory, started, put them on all the people in the movie, and folks bought them.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's people that are like, they love their Crocs.
Hey,
man.
Look, I'm a Crocs ambassador.
Yeah, you are. You sure are. We have plenty of signs of idiocracy. I don't think wrestling is the biggest.
No. Our plants aren't craving electrolytes yet.
Not far off.
Yeah.
But Wrestling Wednesday, it is back. I already see our first bump back, and I'm here for it. I want it. It's a Wrestling Wednesday. How you doing, Rust? You're quiet over there.
Just chilling.
You have the T-shirt, Jeff Rush T-shirt club of the day.
Yeah.
Sherman High School Phys Ed.
Yeah, good old Shermer High School Shermer? Phys Ed. Yes.
What is that from?
The old John Hughes movies, Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles, I believe Ferris Bueller as well. I'm not sure if it was also in Uncle Buck. I think that's a John Hughes flick.
Wait,
too.
They were all the same high
Chicago.
School?
Chicago.
Yeah, well, I know they're all in Chicago, but they were all the same high school?
I believe so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at that.
That's nuts.
Well, John Hughes loved his Chicago
Weird Science.
Yeah, Weird Science. Great movie.
Kelly LeBrock.
Also, problematic when they go to the jazz club.
I think we could pretty much talk about that era as being problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the throwback movies... Very.
It's always fun to throw them on and be like, oh, can't do that today.
But I think we need to learn from it.
Sure. I mean, hell, you get all the way out to Hangover.
Yeah. Well, I give, there's like my parents would always look at me and say, don't repeat that. Don't do that. Like when something came up in a movie like that.
Mm-hmm. They wouldn't
and
even.
And I was like, huh. All right.
They wouldn't even do that with me.
Come on.
I would just snap a look to them and my dad would just shake his head.
Just give you a no. No.
I mean, I'll never forget it, man. My uncle was on the way towards passing. He had very, very, very bad cancer. And he came up to visit before he went out. And he was going to take me on a date. Just go have some fun. Go to the arcade. Go to a movie. And my parents asked him, what movie? He said, oh, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. And he took me to, I was 12 years old, 11 years old. Took me to go see Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves in the theater. And that opened up with the, I'm sorry, not Prince of Thieves, Men in Tights. And that opens up with the jail cell worker snapping the whip at all
Dude,
the hands.
I think
the
you were far younger.
I might have been younger than
11 or
12. Whatever it came out. So it might have been 8 or 9?
That came out in 93. So
nine.
You were 9. Yeah. Yeah.
So 9. Okay. Yeah. That whole era for me, 9 to like 12 is a blur. But so I'm 9 years old. I really want to see this. And he goes, yeah, what am I going to do? I'm dying anyways. Yeah. So he took me, and the opening scene is he's cracking the whip at all the hands reaching through the grate. And then after he walks by, they all turn and give him the bird. I thought that was the funniest freaking thing I'd ever seen in my life. I remember looking at my uncle and he goes, if I ever see you doing that, I'll come back from the dead.
Well, you've done that a lot. And
look, every time.
Let's just say Unc hasn't come back yet.
Every time I give somebody the bird, that does pop up in my head and I kind of chuckle.
All right. We got a lot to get to today. We had the first four yesterday. I bet they're doing the cocky walk in the selection committee today.
Oh, buddy. Old Bubba's out there flexing.
Yeah.
Just like Vince McMahon coming down to the ring.
Oh, yeah.
On Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
North Carolina at this point is his daughter.
Yeah. They are peacocking today. We got two more games of the first four tonight that we will discuss. The Minnesota Vikings have made a decision at quarterback. That's my quarterback. That's my quarterback.
They made a decision. We'll see if it was the right one.
Well, I think it is. Well, yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah. That's a worthwhile conversation. Oregon had their pro day yesterday, and Tez Johnson is getting praised and getting dragged for a decision that he made yesterday at the Ducks pro day. We'll discuss that. Got some NBA stuff to get to. A couple huge wins for teams in the Western Conference over some of the top teams in the East last night. Blazers get continue their home stand tonight as they bring in Memphis Grizzlies. Ja Morant finally going to play in Portland?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, so we got that going for us, which is nice.
Womp, 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 womp.
When's the last time Ja played in Portland?
I think it was 4 years ago now, 3 years ago. You know what?
It's a pretty easy choice. That's funny. Well, that's not funny, but kind of is. I've got 2022, last time he played in Portland. Yeah. It was November 2nd, 2022, Ja Morant's last time he played in the Rose City, and that streak's going to stay alive. He had 29 that game.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good game for John.
2022, man. It's going to be 3 freaking years before he plays here. And it's not like it's an Eastern Conference team. You're playing him 3 or 4 times a year.
Yeah. Yeah. You are.
It's so dumb.
Maybe you could quit beating up high school kids.
It wasn't just that. He was injured before that, even.
He was?
Yeah.
He was.
And that's,
he was.
It was a broken hand.
Hand injury. Then, you know, beating up high school kids, then getting all, you know, gunny while making it rain at a strip club.
Mm-hmm.
Look, he's got there's a lot of reasons why Ja hasn't played here.
And good decisions are not his strong suit.
And beyond that, it's another guy that doesn't get it in the sense of he's got his own signature shoe with Nike. Like those guys typically, look, for whatever you say about LeBron James, he plays here because he knows that half of Nike descends on Moda every time he plays here. Like, that is a thing that happens. It's like, come on, man. It's so frustrating. It's just like...
That's why the NBA is looking for a face of the league.
You're not wrong.
They're desperately searching for one. All right, where we got to start this bad boy off? Carolina. They rise up last night, taking out San Diego State, and my goodness gracious, it was a tale of two teams from beyond the arc. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
First four started last night in Dayton, Ohio. Double dip. St. Francis fell to Alabama State 70-68 for the chance to get their teeth kicked in by Auburn.
Enjoy.
That was a fun finish. We flipped that one on at the end. It was a really fun finish.
Great finish.
Almost at, like, St. Francis just quite literally booted the ball out of bounds on during a tie game with like 3 and change to go. And then Alabama State goes down, gets a score with less than a second on the clock. And they punch their ticket to the round of 64. Did you see, though, this popped up at a point when I turned on the game. They had, they have like the coaches' resumes, all that stuff. You see what Rob Krimmel, St. Francis coach? I went and I looked, because I was like, that can't be right. And it was his record at St. Francis. He's in his 13th season at St. Francis.
Okay.
Not a basketball powerhouse. But 13 seasons, his record is now 171 and 229.
Okay. That's...
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, to be there for 13 years?
That's crazy.
Do you know somebody on school?
But he also has taken St. Francis to the tournament twice, right?
Which, that'll buy you some capital, that's for sure.
Taking them to some college basketball invitationals, the CIT, if you will, which is, we look at these smaller schools and going to a CIT for a power conference is a slap in the face. But for those smaller schools, it's something that they do hang their hat on. Yeah, this year, 16 and 18, the red flashes were.
How many?
And they made the tourney.
How many seasons do they have over 500?
With him there?
Yeah.
He has one. I'll look this up. He has one 20-win season.
Okay.
As the head coach there. But... you go down, he has gone 5-24, 10-21, 16-16, 13-17, 17-17, 18-13, 18-15, 22-10. That was good. 20, and by the way, the 22-10 season, they did not go to a postseason tournament that year. They went to nothing.
Weird.
Mm-hmm. 6-15,
Not enough quad ones.
9-21, 13-18, 8-22 last year, and then this year 16-18, and made it to the tournament.
All right.
So, he is 170 and 228. And in conference, 108 and 117. So under 500 in conference play, too. I found that in the world of college athletics,
a bit surprising.
Surprising.
Yeah.
Also a little refreshing.
Yeah.
They got their guy. He went there. They're keeping him around.
I mean, imagine at a place like that. I mean, look, there's always somebody trying to get a job somewhere, but if you get a guy that's one of your guys and every, 5-6 years is getting you the NCAA tournament at that level, you're probably okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah, make it to a couple postseason tourneys, you're good.
I mean, you make the NCAA tournament, that's probably a pretty sizable cash flow increase for a school that size.
Yeah.
And so getting one of those every 5-6 years is probably something you don't want to be like, yeah, we can do better. It's like, well, can you?
No.
Because getting that basically once every graduating class is probably the difference between, like, teams existing and not.
100%. All right. The big game, though, was the 11 seeds, and this should just go, this is what it should be. The play-in tournament should just be all 11 seeds, right? Instead of having any of these 16 seeds.
Yeah, no, they shouldn't have to work their way in. They already worked their way in, man.
And it would affect, though, you know, the 15 seeds. All of a sudden, you would have some lesser 15 seeds that are in.
But that's how it should be.
Yeah. 15
and 16 seeds should be bad teams.
Yeah. Yeah. So it would affect that. And then all lines kind of get pushed down a little bit. But the intriguing matchups are the 11 seeds because those are truly the last teams to get into the
tournament.
They're
supposed to be.
Yeah. And what we saw in the 11 seed game was a blowout of epic proportions as North Carolina damn near put a hundo on San Diego State, 95-68. And
that's what happens when you get doubled up in the first half.
I don't know if I have seen a team just shut down and shudder like Brian Dutcher's Aztecs did. It was, for most of the game, they were shooting 17%. They got up to 17% at one point from three.
They couldn't hit anything. And meanwhile, RJ Davis just burned the Nets down.
As it finished out, and look, they actually made it more respectable at the end. San Diego State shot 8 of 27 from 3, 29%.
Yeah, and RJ Davis is just a heads-up, shot 6 of 6 from 3.
Meanwhile, North Carolina, looking like a team that has been mocked and degraded for the last 3 days, they look like they were trying to prove a point. They shot 58% from 3.
Yeah, 53% from the field and 88% from the line. They
shot better from 3 than 2.
Yeah, I mean, the game started with it. I mean, RJ Davis just absolutely torched them in the first half.
And now North Carolina gets an Ole Miss team that, by most of the metrics, they should not be a 6 seed. No. I mean, they really shouldn't. They're not an explosive offense. They're really undersized.
Yeah.
And they are, I don't, that's a head scratcher of a 6 seed, especially when you have a team like Louisville that's sitting at an 8 seed where you're like, they seem way better than
Ole Miss. Has got a great coach, though.
They do.
Chris Beard's a great coach. Got his issues, certainly.
I think a lot of this has to do, though, with the fact that you have 3 1 seeds that are SEC teams, mm-hmm. right? Or two of them. You have 2 1 seeds. You have Florida and you have Auburn, mm-hmm. who are 1 seeds. And if you put that 8 seed is a really tough one to wedge in there because you have Georgia, which is a 9 seed, and they're on one side of the bracket. So I think they are on Houston side, mm-hmm. right, in that 8-9 matchup. So you don't want to have conference teams playing each other in the round of 32.
So you had to stagger somewhere.
The lines get all messed up when you have 14 teams from a conference. So Ole Miss was the huge beneficiary of this, getting moved into that 6 line. But North Carolina, you could see them in the round of 32, and I don't think anybody's going to bat an eye at that.
No, not at all. And if you're Bubba Cunningham, I don't know how you could sit there on the sideline of that game last night. And if I were him, I wouldn't be able to wipe the stupid look off my face.
No, you wouldn't. It would be the biggest smile ear to ear.
To his credit, he sat there and was stoic as opposed to a cackling hyena, which I would have been.
How about this, though? North Carolina could be in the Sweet 16 because if they get to the round of 32, it will be the winner of Lipscomb and Iowa State.
And Iowa State is without their best player.
Their best player, their coach after the selection show when they ended up getting the 3 seed was like, oh, BT Dubs, best player out. Sweet 16, North Carolina, after everything that they've been through,
would be a hell of a story. Massive boon for them.
It would be. And it would be huge for the selection committee, too, that has been mocked endlessly. But at the same time, West Virginia is going to be sitting there being like, dude, we could have done this.
Well, not only that.
And our coach just left because we got left out of the tournament for no reason. And now he takes the Indiana job.
How much of this is devil's advocate of the and this is me tightening the tinfoil a little bit, of North, of the committee doing this, knowing full well that Iowa State was going to be shorthanded. And you give North Carolina the best possible path for you to go, see?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Look, look where they are.
Right?
Look, I mean.
That is true.
North Carolina is still the fourth biggest brand in college basketball.
Oh, yeah. And there's going to be, there will be people that argue that they're bigger than that. There will be people that argue they're the biggest brand in college hoops.
It's Duke.
It is, but Carolina fans will tell you it's not.
No, look, Carolina fans, I love you guys. You guys give the best looking just
Carolina,
color palette.
Duke
just,
in Kansas.
Yeah.
Those three.
Kentucky's without Cal does drop down a little bit, but yeah.
I think Kentucky with Cal dropped itself down because, I mean, they were the number one recruiting class every single year, and you still find ways
but
to
lose. You everybody's still tuned in because of
that.
It's Kentucky.
Well, Carolina, that was a spanking, man.
I mean, I think that game was over in the first 5 minutes. It was over, and it was crazy. I had it on in the background, and I was just doing some stuff around the house, and I sat back down, and I went, the hell happened? Just kind of rewound it and just went, oh, this is over immediately.
I don't like to crush college kids for their performances in any single game. Miles Byrd was a guy who, for San Diego State, he's kind of one of those fringe lottery guys, first round guy.
Depends on who you talk to. He's very divisive in the sense of, like, he's either a lotto guy or he's mid late 20s. But yes.
Well, I think the lasting impression that is going to be for him is 1 of 5 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3. And 3 turnovers to go along with it. He looked disjointed and the rest of the team kind of followed suit. And that's what it looked like. They took a look around and said, our best player doesn't have it tonight. We're out.
Yeah.
And that's a tough pill to swallow.
And that's what we talk about when we talk about markers with teams. When you have one guy, if the one guy doesn't have it, the trickle-down effect of that. And that's typically what happens when you're talking about basically like 9, probably 10 seeds and back. Because everybody else from the 1 through 8, they've got depth.
Yeah.
They've got some, even if you don't have a star or if you have a really good player, you've got some upperclassmen that are helping balance, which gives you more consistency. And that's the name of the game in college basketball. Yes, high-end talent matters, but it's not hard to go back and be like, look at UW with Markelle Fultz. They're god-awful.
Yeah.
Number one player in the country.
Yep.
They went, what, 2-15 in conference play? Lorenzo Romar gets fired. Like, just because you have, like, the top-end guy, and that's what the whole thing with Cooper Flagg is, why it's so impressive, is that Cooper Flagg has been the best player in the country as a 17-year-old and an 18-year-old freshman while also leading that dynamic team. And you look further north at Rutgers, who has the next probably 2 and 3 pick in the NBA draft, but because there's nothing else around them, they look horrid. Like, that consistency matters. And if you don't have the consistency surround those other guys, which is a little bit weird for San Diego State, because San Diego State is typically one of those teams, a la Houston, that has consistency and they have the stuff around you to kind of lift you up.
Yeah. All right. Well, tonight we get Mount St. Mary's versus American University. Catch a fever on that one.
Yeah, that's one.
Winner plays Duke.
Yeah, that's the one that, look, I have the monitor up during Blazers games. I'm not going to have the monitor up for that game.
Yeah, and then you have Xavier, Texas in the 11th
match. That one I will have the monitor up for.
Yeah, that should be a fun one. So those are your first four tonight. North Carolina, man, that was a statement, though. They look good. They looked really dang good.
Yeah.
I'm going to golf clap them.
Yeah, they
deserve
it. They got talent, man.
They deserve it. All right, we have a decision. The Minnesota Vikings say, we moving forward. They've made a decision at quarterback.
Mm.
That, after Rust, with SportsCenter, where he surely won't talk about this story that we are going to talk about next. Minnesota Vikings have made a decision at quarterback, according to ESPN. They're going to be rolling with J.J. McCarthy at quarterback this year. Kevin Seifert, who covers the Vikings for ESPN, says, according to his sources, They are not going to pursue bringing in Aaron Rodgers this year. There was the rumblings and the rumors that Aaron Rodgers was they were waiting to decide on Aaron Rodgers and his future and where he wants to go. They've pulled the ripcord on that and
said, nah,
we're going to roll with JJ. And that's what we talked about yesterday, too, and all this is that they've built a roster to help with JJ McCarthy. When you have Justin Jefferson, when you have Jordan Addison and TJ Hockenson and Aaron Jones, right? You are looking at a team that is built to win with a quarterback. But what they did in bolstering their O-line and adding depth in the backfield, that was we need to be able to run the damn ball. And that's what they're going to try to do. And you want to do that with any quarterback.
Yeah.
But it looked like all of the moves were young quarterback. How do we build around him?
Yeah.
Not an aging veteran who's going to take up a bunch of money. Because Aaron Rodgers is still going to want his money.
Yeah, for sure. And it's an interesting move, I guess, is the way I would go with it. Because it doesn't feel like they're doing this confidently. The fact that you're even entertaining the Rodgers stuff just lends me to believe that even if JJ hadn't torn his knee, you're like,
Well, it's a great unknown because he's the first round quarterback to miss his rookie year due to injury. Like the entire year. Mm-hmm. He got surgery in August and they didn't see him. So there is a great unknown at what you have with JJ McCarthy because everything coming out of the draft was between the ears. JJ McCarthy has it, right? He has the demeanor. He can handle a huddle in a locker room.
And there's plenty of talk about McCarthy being the guy that they were going to go into the season with. I still don't was entirely true.
Well, it's the physical attributes that you just don't know.
Yeah.
And they drafted him knowing that, but they had brought Sam Darnold in for the, just in case. Mm-hmm. We're going to see. And they're still at that point. Because you really don't know until he gets out there and he starts playing.
Yeah, you don't know until the live bullets go.
It is familiarity with the system, the offense, and the people that he's around. I think that is a huge leg up in not playing last year. And he just got to sit back without the pressure of, hey, put in McCarthy.
Put the headset on and just absorb.
Darnold never gave them a reason to have those kind of rumblings until the very end of the year. But now you can see you can feel a little bit more confident in rolling him out there, but I'm with you in that it doesn't seem like they're doing this in a full-throated confidence. But I understand why you wouldn't. I totally get why you wouldn't do that if you are the Minnesota Vikings because JJ McCarthy's never given you a reason to fully trust him as your starting quarterback because he's been hurt.
And he's never given you a reason for you to just say no, at least publicly. Now, behind the scenes, we don't know what that is. But it's definitely, I've got an eyebrow raised looking at what they've got going on there and going, okay. You invested real draft capital. You think he's going to be the guy. To be honest, I love the fact, not that I don't know if he got hurt, but I do love the fact that he sat for a year. I genuinely do. And I wish more teams were not only willing but capable of doing this in that – more often than not, it's beneficial. And everybody's like, well, Jaden Daniels. I'm like, yes, you're right. Jaden Daniels. The first time we've seen a rookie quarterback be otherworldly successful. Now, C.J. Stroud was good. Don't get me wrong. He was really good his rookie year. Those are the rarities.
Yeah, I've looked this up in that the boom-bust aspect of a guy starting from day one as opposed to sitting a year. It does skew more to if you sit a guy, he is better off. But it's not as dramatic as you would think because every quarterback is a boom bust guy.
Yes,
like in that you don't know until you get him on the field. But I think that if you're taking the third quarterback off the board in a draft, at that point you go, it does behoove you to sit him for a year because there's a reason why he wasn't one of the top guys. Like Jaden Daniels, he was one of the top guys, and he seamlessly moved in there.
Also older.
Bo Nix in Denver was a perfect marriage of system and quarterback.
Also older.
And McCarthy is, he's not young.
No, but I mean, like, you're talking about two fifth-year guys in Daniels and Nix?
Yeah, but J.J. McCarthy is still, he went through college, played in a pro-style offense, sure. But the system and the style fitting what you do, that has to be paramount. And we just didn't know that about J.J. McCarthy because he was a, we're going to line up double tight and eye formation, pound the ball down your throat, and I will get nickel and dime, almost Russell Wilson-esque, of hit you with play action. He wasn't asked to do what Kevin O'Connell's offense does.
No.
And Bo Nix was asked to do exactly what his strengths are. Jaden Daniels with Cliff Kingsbury was asked to do exactly what his strengths are and the things that he did throughout college. J.J. McCarthy wasn't going to be doing that.
No, and that's the thing that I question with this is that Vikings offense and what, and this is my personal criticism of J.J. McCarthy and what people thought of him, and how, like, I don't know how you project a guy that was never asked to shoulder a burden of an offense ever at Michigan and be like, yeah, no, we're going to make him shoulder an actual burden and we're going to run a very complex offense. It's going to be pass heavy. And you've got some of the best targets in the NFL and you're going to be tasked with getting them the ball frequently as the lead guy. And I'm like, he didn't do that once at Michigan. Like I never got that.
Yeah. I think
quarterback's projection thing and how everything can be different. It just,
but I think he did win them games. He did win them games.
He did win them games, but he you never went into a game going, J.J. McCarthy is going to throw the ball for us 25 times for us to win the game.
He got them to the right, and this is the thing that Harbaugh always said. J.J. McCarthy had such a mastery of the offense, he got them to the right play.
Which matters.
That's the most important thing. Like, I think that is the most important thing for any quarterback is get you to the right play. And that comes with your preparation, your acuity, and what you can do pre-snap. And that's where J.J. McCarthy is going to thrive. That's why I think what the draw was for Kevin O'Connell. But the questions of can he do it and throw the ball 30, 35 times in a game? And can he put it exactly where Justin Jefferson needs to get it to make a play on it? Like that, those are all things that we need to be TBD, right?
And I'm not saying I am not out on him like I was with like Justin Fields.
Yeah.
Like immediately, I'm like, no, do not want. McCarthy, like he's going back, you know, leading into the draft and watching some of his tape, I was like, okay, he's got tools. It's not like you're like, oh, he doesn't have an arm. Oh, he can't put the ball where it needs to go. It's just he was never asked to do it.
Yeah. But he was. The Rose Bowl, he had some pretty incredible throws against Alabama.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying.
Like, I mean.
But I'm talking
He put the ball in some tight windows. And, yeah, because that was the system, the style, and, you know, the most of those checks in that offense. And that's going to be the part that is going to be the interesting one is he's going to be asked to check to a far different style of offense than he was at Michigan, which was, oh, you're going to lighten the box? Well, we'll just run it down your throat. Oh, you're going to have your linebacker playing, you know, a half a yard over. It's okay. We can get outside and we'll climb because they had an incredible offensive line. There's a lot that's going to be determined with JJ. He's a rookie quarterback this year, and that's it right there.
So just as a singular point here. He attempted more than 26 passes, or 26 or more, 10 times in 40 games. Those came against Purdue, Indiana, TCU, which that's a big one, Illinois, East Carolina, Iowa, Michigan State, Alabama, in which he was 17 of 27, and he did have the big-time throws, Rutgers and Maryland.
Yeah.
So twice on the big stage that he attempt more than 25 passes, and in neither of those games was I guess the Alabama one was a good game as far as overall consistency. But against TCU, 20 of 34, two picks. It's like that's my whole thing. It's like most of the time it's the game management stuff. And if that's what you want to be, and that's what you that's the thing that you're gonna do with him, great. But if you're gonna have all of those weapons, it just feels like a weird fit to me.
Yeah. And, I mean, we can go down the list of quarterbacks that had prolific stats that sucked in the NFL.
Oh, God, yes. God, yes.
So, the style of offense that he played in was pro style with Harbaugh.
100%.
And he's – I think he's going to be good. I don't think he's going to be elite. And like this text or fan text line, 503-864-6326. Jalen Hurts won a Super Bowl. He ain't no Dan Marino.
You're not wrong. But Minnesota Vikings don't have that defense.
Their defense is good.
It's good. But
their defense is really damn good.
It's good, but that Eagles defense is the best defense in the league.
Yeah. They don't have a Justin Jefferson either.
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
They got A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, which are good.
Very good.
And they got Saquon Barkley, mm-hmm. which is really good.
Incredibly good.
But you just got to be good enough.
My whole thing
that
is...
That division is really tough.
It's not that he's bad. I have hesitancy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, he will be the guy in Minnesota, and we'll see kind of where the Vikings go from here. All right. Something happened today, and I just go down the rabbit hole. We started really early in the morning, and I could not pull myself out of this spiral. And I wonder if anybody else does this, too.
I like holes.
Danny and Dusty on the Fan. This morning, I was flipping on SportsCenter, and I saw the results of the Dodgers-Cubs game in Tokyo.
Indeed.
Yeah. Dodgers take both of the Tokyo series from, or guys, Tokyo pair? They call it the Tokyo series, but a series, isn't that three or more?
No, because they call them that. You'll have some of your other crossover interleague matchups, too, where like the Mariners and Padres do this all the time. Whenever they play, it's always a two-game set.
Yeah. But
they do it twice, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Because it's a set is a series, and I thought a set was three. I don't know. I'm pretty dumb.
I don't know. In tennis, a set is one.
Yeah. Of three games. Yeah. Right? Huh?
Well, first one within the set.
Within the set? So, I don't know. But, anyways...
I know what throwing up a set.
The Dodgers beat the Cubs 6-3. And they won both of them. And I started seeing the highlights. And there's a lot out of this Tokyo series that is pretty incredible. One being, the people of Japan love their baseball.
Oh, buddy.
Arash Markazi had tweeted out that on the resale market, he was over there for this series. On the resale market, tickets were going for $3,500 just to get in the door.
Which is more expensive than the Super Bowl.
That is bananas. Like they love their baseball. And then you just look at the Dodgers and Cubs lineups and you go, yep, get it. A lot of homegrown talent there.
Not just that. Shohei Ohtani is Michael Jordan in his prime over there.
Yeah.
He's the most popular person in the nation. Like when he goes up to bat or he's pitching, it's kind of like old timey New York when like you'd have the TVs or in the windows and stuff like that. Like entire city shut down and watch him.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Pretty badass. And then there's the replays, the AI replays. Those are stupid and we need to stop calling them cool. They look like a video game and they're glitchy and I don't see why people are going crazy over them.
Did you see the on-field camera?
Well, it's not an on-field camera. It's an AI recreation of the Dansby Swanson play. Is that what you're talking about?
Is that
about?
What it is?
Yeah, they did it with Ohtani's home run, too.
It was crazy looking.
It just looks like a video game, and it's glitchy, and they're like, this is the future. It's like, come on. It's the simulated version of the play.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts looking when I saw it. I was like, that looks weird, because it looked like an over-the-shoulder camera.
Yeah, but it's not.
No.
It's an AI recreation
of the play. That's what you get for watching on Twitter sometimes.
See? Yeah. And it just looked like some guy was like in, you know, left center field behind Dansby Swanson just videotaping him. No, it wasn't.
Because I was watching in my backyard when I was letting the dogs out. Yeah. I was watching that replay. And sometimes the Wi-Fi doesn't work great back there. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, okay. It must just be like an over-the-camera or over-the-shoulder camera.
Mm-mm.
And I was like, no. My thought process was, I guess it's Japan. They're going to do some weird stuff. And
no, they did. They did some weird stuff.
Hit the ground if the line drive comes your way, buddy.
I went in a rabbit hole, though, because every baseball season I find myself doing this. And it's usually around opening day. But I was watching the Dodgers-Cubs highlights. And immediately my mind goes to, there are like a billion Tony Gwynn hitting instructional videos on the internet of him just talking about the art of hitting, how he hits. I watched probably 45 minutes of clips of Tony Gwynn just teaching people how to hit. I could watch that all damn day. And there's like certain people that you just go back to and no matter what, you just will. I could listen to him talk about hitting all day long. I could listen to the Pete Maravich basketball videos.
Hubie Brown.
Those ones are the ones that I always like will go to, and it's like, dude, you could. This is all still stuff that it's timeless. Yeah. That you can do.
I could listen to Hubie Brown talking about, that's why he broadcasted into his 90s, is he was able to succinctly break down basketball better than anyone.
Yeah. The Bill anyone. Walsh talking offense and spacing in football, that's the other one. Football's one that's really hard because the game changes so much, and we are just now getting into, like, the art of throwing the football and what mechanics are and route running and your footwork and stuff. It's all way too new, but you're going to see
Gruden's the best for me for that, for the film stuff. I mean, the Spider 2 Y banana, you know,
and it, for future generations, it will be Gruden. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of going to be where it is. Or like Route God on social media, who does all the running route stuff. Like he's going to be that guy. But Tony Gwynn, for me, just like his voice was, it did not match his body at all.
At all.
But it's his voice and the way that he was able to teach the art of hitting. Unbelievable. Him, and then there's like old grainy videos of Ted Williams.
Yeah.
But those two guys, I could watch talk about hitting for days.
It's the mixture of their extreme talent.
Yeah.
Their simplicity. Their cadence, like everybody, the best instructors, teachers I've ever had, and this is for me personally, are guys that could break the most complex things down to like three or four very, very, very simple steps. And then everything else was superfluous. And you just kind of, like, once you boil that stuff down, and it doesn't matter what it's for, just instruction in general. It's like, give me what I need. Give me the best basics to work with and then go from there.
Like Tony Gwynn's is your front foot, your weight should not shift. If your weight is on your toes, it should be on your toes. Your foot, you should just replace. Your foot may move, your weight shouldn't. And then your top hand, palm should be up when you're bringing the bat through the strike zone. He's like, everything else, if you have those two things, you can get everything else in rhythm. It's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. To think of the hardest thing, and he's like, yeah, it's super simple. And then he goes into like, so if I want to hit the ball opposite field, you know, I just wait for it to come through the zone a little bit. It's like, dude, that ball's going 90 miles an hour. Yeah. How in the world are you like, yeah, it's super simple. Just wait for it to come through.
Just wait a millisecond longer.
But he does take, he's like, but it's a whole lot easier if you're not thinking about a bunch of stuff. All you're doing is saying weight balance, top hand, palm up. I was crazy. So I went through the rabbit hole today.
Those are fun rabbit holes to go down.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you have any Tony Gwynn videos, just send them to me.
There you go.
That's just, I always love to see the Tony Gwynn instructional hitting videos. All right, 503-864-6326. That is the fan text line. Smart move or dumb move? Pro day at Oregon, and Tez Johnson didn't run the 40, and there's mixed bag on why he didn't do it. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.